We're starting a series called Invest. And it's not primarily at all about our money. It's about how we make an investment in life, because we all do. We make investments and we're hoping for some sort of worthwhile result. We put our energy or our time and our money into something, and we're hoping that our investment will have some sort of return, a payoff to us. We started East Lake Church as an investment. We were willing to put in a lot of energy and a lot of time and a lot of money so people in this area would know that Jesus loves them and accepts them and forgives them. That you don't have to earn God's love by working. That it's a gift which changes everything. And to be at East Lake, to be a part of East Lake, is to join an investment. It's to understand that we're making an investment in the community so people can understand and get how God cares about them. To make an investment. And I wanted to ask a question today. You can just jot it in the margin of your notes. How happy are you with the investments you're making in life? Are you getting the results that you want? Are you getting the return on your investments? And it's the big idea this weekend. You can write, Jesus will multiply your investment. East Lake Church is an investment into the community. And to be a part of it is to join the investment. And how does he multiply it? We're going to read a story today that's like a really good picture of how to invest. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw the large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like a sheep without a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. So here's the backdrop. Jesus has these 12 friends. He calls them disciples. And they've just come back from this mission. And he sends them out and he has a message. He says, go tell everybody that God invites you into his kingdom. Go tell everybody that God wants you, which was very different than the religious message of the day. Remember, when Jesus came, there was one huge dominant church that everybody either went to or didn't. And the message of that dominant religion was, there's a lot of things you need to do to make God want you. And they come with a completely different message. Their message is, God wants you on the basis of his character, not yours. You don't have to earn his love. And he's inviting you into his kingdom. And people are like blown away by that, especially the ones that really didn't want to go to church. And the disciples, they start to get this message across to people. God wants you, invites you into their kingdom. And they would pray for people, which was very different, because in the religion of the day, you never saw anybody praying in church. You grew up in that religion. You just didn't see people pray. No one ever prayed for you. You never saw people pray. But the disciples were praying for people, which was just like everybody was blown away. It was like, I've never seen anybody actually pray to God before or pray for me. They'd be talking to people, and they would say, well, hey, let me pray for you. And sometimes people will come to East Lake, and they'll say, well, God, the way you guys pray is so conversational. Is it okay to talk to God like that? And I'll say, well, you know, you can pray however you want, but when you talk to God, just like talk to him like you just always talk. Like be who you are with God. I mean, all relationships, by the way, are best if you can just be who you are. And so you can just talk to God, because people will get in their mind sometimes, because maybe they've seen somebody on TV, but there's like a special way that you have to pray, and you have to draw out, like, oh, God, you know, and there's like this real special like tone that you have to use. And really, when you pray, you're just talking to God. And they would come and be very conversational. Let me show you right now. So everybody just keep your eyes open. I'll keep my eyes open. I'll just show you. Here's a way you can pray. You can just bounce right into it. And just, God, I just pray for everybody today that you'd open our hearts up and you'd open our minds up. And it'd be really easy today to receive from you. And here's my prayer, God, is that we would be so glad that we attended church. We'd be happy. We'd feel better off about ourselves today when we leave than we showed up here. And I ask it in your name, Jesus. Prayer. I mean, that is just, it's just like talking. You know, we started East Lake for people that weren't so sure they wanted to go to church, but they wanted to find out more about God. In fact, we're hoping that unchurched people would come here and they would be happy that they went to church. We want people to love Eastlake that wouldn't ever think they would love going to church. And when people went out on this mission, everybody was startled because they were praying. My favorite story about prayer is when I went to school, I went to a Christian school, and once a week they'd have this assembly where all the students would get together. There'd be like 500, 600, 700 students in this big, huge room, and they would always have a speaker come in and do a sermon. And sometimes it would be good, but sometimes it would be so boring. I mean, when a boring sermon, very unlike the ones you hear all the time here, but like when a really boring sermon would be going on, people would be like full on out asleep in the pews, man. I mean, there'd be like half the auditorium would be like zone land sleeping. And one day this guy's up there and he's just droning on and on and on and on and on. And people are just like snoozing throughout the entire room. And this little group of evil friends had an idea because their friend is like asleep right in his pew like this, you know. And they get this idea. They wake him up. And now this guy is up front. He's talking, right? And they wake him up and they say, "Listen, man, the guy's all done preaching and he just called on you to stand up and pray for everybody." So this dude that's sound asleep bolts to his feet and says, "Oh God in heaven, on this day I lift my prayers." And then all of a sudden he realizes that the entire room, man, is laughing their heads off because he's totally interrupted this guy up front. And of course, the old man up front, he's like, young man, you know, it's like, favorite thing about prayer is that God probably was laughing too. He's probably, "Look, what happened to that guy?" Here's all I want to say. They come back from this mission, and they've been praying for people. Who do you pray for? Who's in your life, and you just say little prayers once in a while for them, beside yourself, or a parking place, or a raise at work? Who do you pray for? They come back, and they've been praying, and they come back, and Jesus sees them, and he says, "Man, you guys look tired. Let's go camping." I mean, Jesus was always one for getting out of the city. He's like, "Let's get out of here, man. Let's go camping. We're out, you know." And they lived in a city that was right alongside this huge lake. Sound familiar? And I mean, this ginormous lake. So they get in a boat, and they're going to go to this campground on the other side of the lake. So here they go. You know, him and his guys are all going. And the crowd hears about it, and they start talking about it because, like, they're still talking about how different this new way is of being of God. And by the way, everything always grows because people talk about it. YouTube, Facebook, whatever, Twitter, I mean, they're always talking about it, you know. And so everybody's talking about, Jesus said what? Did you hear them pray? They talk just like we. And so there's thousands of people talking about it. And they'd see the disciples and Jesus get in the boat and all these people start to gather. And they know where the campground is, so they take a shortcut to the campground. And Jesus and his boys, they roll up in the boat. And here's this crowd of thousands of people there because everybody's been talking. We have these in the program so it help you talk. I slipped one of these to a guy this week. He's at my work. He goes, "Are you a preacher? Are you one of those preachers that goes, 'Oh, God's going to strike you'?" And I said, "No, I'm not that kind of preacher." But he said, "Well, what do you do?" I said, "Well, check this out. Go on here. You can see the whole thing. You know, I just spread the word a little bit." And that's why we put those in there, so you can just slip it to somebody and talk to them. So they're all talking. Now, thousands of people are at the campground. Here's a question. When's the last time you thought you were going to get a break and then somebody needed you? "Can you come over and help me move?" You're like, "That's my day off to get a break and sleep in all day." "No, I can't. You live on the third floor. Lame." You know. When is the last time you were so sure you were going to get a break and then the professor gives another assignment? Or your child gets sick. Or your husband decides it's project day. He only does that once every 5 years, so you got to jump on that, you know. Or you thought, "I'm going to get a break," and then no break. Here's what it is. And there's something about the crowd. I mean, Jesus gets out of the boat, he can set boundaries. He could have very easily said, "Listen, my boys are tired. They can't come in here and take care of all of you. No, you back away." He will be that way, but he doesn't. He sees something in the crowd. The Bible says he has compassion on them in the story. This is a crowd of people that are lost, and they know it, but they want to find their way. When you're lost and you know it, and you want to find your way, and that's what Jesus notices. He looks out on the crowd, he goes, "Look at them all." I mean, they know they're lost, but they want to find their way. Unlike my dog, Sam, I have a little dog at home. He's a family dog who is constantly getting lost. Here's Sam's problem. Sam thinks that he can go wherever he wants and he'll always be able to find his way home. That dog can't go half a block and remember where he lives. I mean, and he's always wandering off. On the 4th of July, someone left the back door open, and he got out the back door and was and he can't stand fireworks. We have to give him like doggy downers, you know, to mellow him out on the 4th of July. And he got loose. He got all blocks from the house, fireworks going off. And when he came home, like finally someone called us and we got him. Sounds like a boomerang too, man. He always comes back somehow. But never on his own. Someone finds him and calls us up. And this guy that calls me up, he was like from the Middle East. I could not understand a word that he said. And it was like very difficult. But here comes Sam. We finally get him and bring him home. And he's shaken. Man, I felt bad for him. He's like, oh, he's like in trauma, you know. And for days, like he really, and I thought, now Sam has learned his lesson. He didn't learn his lesson. I mean, I'm telling you, just the other day, we're all sitting in the backyard, and someone left the gate open. We look out, and there's Sam going down the sidewalk again. I'll be able to find my way back. Sam! Hey, I want to ask you a question. Are you somewhere lost, and it's all of a sudden dawned on you that at one point you kept telling yourself, oh, I'll find my way back, and now you can't? You know, you just sort of thought, oh, I'll get back to where I was before. I'll become the person I was before. This isn't going to totally change my life. I mean, and then all of a sudden, now you realize, whoa, I'm lost. And I can't find my way home. You're like Sam the dog. You need some guy from the Middle East to round you up and call your owner. And say, because you can't find your way home now. And I don't know what it is about dogs anyways. I mean, I don't know if you live in a place where there's a neighborhood, but all the entire day, there will not be one dog bark in my neighborhood. The entire day long, not one dog will bark. And then at 2 a.m. in the morning, they're like having a conversation. And I don't understand what it is because here's the problem. I tend to be a night sleeper. I don't know about you, but I do most of my sleeping at night. And so these guys at 2 a.m. are having a conversation in the yard, and it's like, you're in your backyard. There's no problem in your backyard. And I don't know why it is at like 2 a.m. in the morning, they must think to themselves, oh, I'm in the backyard. I got to get out of here, man. And even their bark sounds like, out, 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 out. And they're going on and on and on. And it doesn't matter if you open up the window and say, shut up. Stop your barking. A dog never says, oh, my bad. I had no idea. What am I thinking, man? It's the middle of the night. I'm sorry. I am a dog. I'm crazy. Dogs are famous for leaving, thinking they'll find their way home, and then they can't find their way home. And Jesus looks out in the crowd, and he sees these people, and he looks at me and says, they look like they know they're lost. And don't ever be afraid to go to Jesus and say, I'm lost. Because you know what you'll receive? Compassion. A lot of times we try to act like, oh, I'm not lost. I know exactly where I am. My checking account's overdrawn, and my head's all screwed up, and I'm in a fight with my parents, but I'm good. You don't have to be that way with God. You can go to Jesus and just admit, I am really lost, and I'd like to find my way home, Lord. It says that they're like sheep without a shepherd. Now, sheep are not like dogs. Sheep are notorious for being lost, but sheep don't run off like a dog. Like Sam watches, and in just a moment when nobody's looking, he's gone out the gate. Sheep are not like that. Sheep fade and drift away. They nibble. A sheep is a nibbler. That's how they eat. They see the little grass, and they nibble, nibble, nibble. And then they're not looking up and seeing on what's going on around them. They see some more grass, and they go over there, and they nibble, nibble, nibble. And there's some more green grass. Ooh, that looks good. And they go over there and they nibble, nibble, nibble. And they nibble and they nibble. And pretty soon they have just drifted off into danger. What are you nibbling at? You're just nibbling. You didn't mean anything by it. You're just nibbling. I'm just taking a little bite of it. Just a tiny little bite. It can't hurt me. Ooh, there's some more. And you go over and you nibble at that. And you nibble and you nibble. And pretty soon, you're a long ways away. You might even be in danger. Jesus looks out at the crowd. He says, they're just like a sheep. They nibble themselves all the way over. And you know what a shepherd does? It watches out for the sheep. It looks at him and says, one more nibble. I'm going to have to go grab her, bring her back. And it's in this context that Jesus says, I'm going to teach everybody about investment. So let's see what it's all about. Turn your program to the part where it says, the impossible becomes the possible. Look at the story. That's the backdrop. Here it comes. By this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. This is a remote place, they said, and it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. But he answered, you give them something to eat. They said to him, that would take 8 months of man's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them? How many loaves do you have? He asked. Go and see. When they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Is there anything in your life that you'd like to see happen, but you've already decided it's too late? It's too late for me on that one. Because some things occur and you can't get them back. And the only way it ever returns to me is somehow Jesus redeems it, because facts are facts. And the disciples show up and they say, it's way too late to try to take this one on. And I've often discovered that when I say I don't have enough time, it's usually a cover-up for something else. What's happening in your life, and you know you were supposed to do it, and then when it came time to explain why you didn't do it, you said, I didn't have time. Now, fall's approaching, which is always a very difficult place in the year for me, very difficult time in the year for me, because it means the Christmas decorations are coming out. My wife starts planning Christmas in like June. And so, you know, now the Christmas stuff is going to come up from the basement, and all the stuff's going to come out. And the dreaded outdoor Christmas lights, which I hate anyways, I have to put those up every single year. And I never have time. I do not have time for those things. There's always something to do. I'll get a root canal before I'll put those lights up. It's like, put the lights up when it's in August or September because it's warm out. And it's like, no, I don't have time. I'd much rather go the 1st of December when it's icy and slippery and cold and windy on the roof. You know, never having time. And like last year, I thought I was going to set the record because I'm even worse after Christmas. I don't have time. I didn't take my lights last year down until the end of March. I just left them up there. And I thought I was like, I'm thinking to myself, I should get an award from the other dudes in the neighborhood, the man that stalled his wife off the longest. And then there's another guy 2 houses down. He has never taken down his lights the entire year. This brother is bad. He did not, listen now, every single night since last Christmas, he has turned his lights on as a declaration, I do not have time. And I salute him. Now, I'm not saying this stuff is good between him and his wife. There might be other things not gone well throughout the rest of the year, but at least he hasn't had to take those lights down. Because I don't have time. Here's what I've discovered when I say that. I don't know about you. Think about what you were supposed to have done, and you never did it, and here was your lame excuse. I didn't have time. Here's what I've usually found out. What's really true is I didn't plan, or I didn't care, or I forgot. Or like the Christmas lights, it's not a priority. It's like I want to pay money with my electricity to do something I hate. It's not a priority of mine to put those lights up. But it is for my wife. So I put them up, gratefully, with a smile on my face. Every August 1st, I try. But listen, don't be fooled, because the disciples, here's what's happening here. They come up to Jesus, and they say, Jesus, we don't have time to help all these people. And there's a cover-up going on, because they have already told Jesus, they've already shown their heart when they came up to Jesus and said, send them away. Have you ever been in a church or with someone religious or something, and something happened in your life and it was not so good and they sent you away? We invested Eastlake Church so nobody would ever have to think they were sent away by a church. That's our whole idea here, man, as it goes viral. That's the church where nobody will send you away. In fact, we're trying to do just the opposite. We're trying to get people to join in and realize God won't send them away. Ever had anybody in your family send you away? And churches send people away all kinds of different... I mean, one of the ways they send people away is they make church so boring. Or they have these terrible, ridiculous, like the music. People are sitting at organs still. Some old lady there with gray hair piled up super high, making you sing out of a book. That'll send people away. Or they have all sorts of rules for people to follow. When you don't follow them, man, you're going to hell. Or some other place where you got to work a long time to get to the next spot that ain't much better. It's like, it sends you away. My grandmother told me when I was a little kid one time, I stole some stuff I shouldn't have. She was going to give me a spanking. And I said, I want a spanking. And she said, well, you know, God's mad at you. And I said, well, how come? Well, you stole something. I said, I know. And he said, he always gets mad at bad little boys. And I remember thinking how that sent me away from God, because I was like, I don't even have a chance because I'm always a bad little boy. Who has sent you away? We invested Eastlake Church so there would be a spot where nobody would be sent away. And they're trying to cover it up with time. We don't have time, Jesus. We don't have time. And here's what they're actually covering up. They don't want to spend their money on these people. They're the types, I don't know if you know anybody like this, they're the type of people that feel like, I earned this money, this is my money, and I can spend all of it on myself. And there's nothing wrong with that. And you're asking me to spend my money on all these people that I don't even know? I mean, praying for them was one thing, God, but pulling out my wallet, that's another. That's not fair. And they're trying to cover that up by saying they don't have time. When the real truth is, they don't want to spend their money. They don't want to invest any money in what God's doing. The problem with that is when, like, my life is supposed to be a storehouse. God puts a lot of it in, and then I get to use what's in the storehouse, and it's for other people too. It's about joining his grand plan of provision. Because when you're the provider of your life, here's what you think. I put everything in that storehouse, and everything in that storehouse belongs to me. How are you doing with generosity? And I don't mean the generosity to buy some guy a tall boy down at the bar for $3. Woo-hoo, spent a lot of money tonight. I don't mean that type of generosity. I mean the generosity that stings a little bit. These guys look at the crowd and they say, that's going to take 8 months of money, Jesus. Are you cracked? That's a lot of money you're asking me to invest. When's the last time you gave something away? And again, not a PBR for $3 that made you feel generous. I mean, when is the last time you gave something away and it stung? I used to come out, years ago, I'd come out of all the grocery stores and the places where you'd see the people with the signs and stuff, and they had such a bad attitude. I was so judgmental. I was like, they can get a job. Anybody can get a job flipping burgers. I can't even believe that, you know? And I'd have all these, I used to call them beggars. And then one time, God started a conversation with me, and here's one thing. They're not beggars, they're people. And I was like, oh. It's weird, too, because I grew up in a poor family. It's so weird how you can forget that and judge someone else. Isn't that weird when you can be judgmental about something that you've done before? What is that? It's like, beggars, get a job. And God's like, they're not beggars, they're people. I was like, yeah, God, but if I give them money, they're just going to go buy beer or drugs or something like that. Oh, yeah, I need food, right? Yeah, you know what they're going to do. And this is what God, how do you know? It's like, why? I just know. No, but how do you know? You're God now, you know the future? Well, no, but I know stuff. You know, it's like, how do you know? And I had to admit, I don't know. And then here was the great question. How could you know? Well, I guess I could ask you, because you probably know. I said, I don't know if I shouldn't give him money or not, God. He said, I know, because only I know if you should. And so that's when God told me, he says, every time you see, if you like, you want it, like, just ask me and I'll tell you. Okay. So I've been doing that for a long time. I'm going down the street the other day. I'm on my way home. I'm going to go to 7-Eleven, grab a couple beers, and go home. I'm going to relax. My day is done. I'm on my way home, and I roll up to this corner. There's a bus stop there, and there's a real skinny guy with a beard, you know, half teeth out of his head, and he's standing there, and he's got a little sign up, and I was like, hey, what's up? And I got a $10 bill and a $1 bill in my pocket. That's all the money I have. And I see him there, and I look at him, and I said, hey, God. what about him? Should we give him any money? And God says, yeah, give him the 10. I'm like, the 10? That's my beer money. What are you talking about? He's like, come on, give him the 10. I'm like, come on, man. I got plans for that 10. I'm going to the 7-Eleven with that 10. And God always talks to me just like I'm talking to myself. He says, come on, Robin, give him the 10. I'm like, come on. You know, I don't know if you've ever done this with God. All of a sudden you're 5 years old. Not the 10. It's not fair, man. You know, it's weird when you call God man, too. It's like, I didn't mean that. I mean God. But it's like, you know, give him the 10. Come on, just give him the 10. The light's going to change. I'm like, ah. You know, so I rolled down the window. I said, hey, man, come here. And I get the 10 out. And it was all I could do not to ask him to make change. And I said, and you know what? I don't want to get all freaky on you, but I'm telling you what, this had to be God, because he looked right at me. He said, thank you. God bless you. It went right through me. And, you know, I'm leaving, and as I'm leaving, I'm rolling by the 7-Eleven. I got $1. I'm thinking, you know, but it did sting a little bit. And it was only $10, but it was all my money. Now, when I got home, I arrive at my house, and my darling wife had gone to the state liquor store that day and got a six-pack of my favorite beer, and it had been chilling the whole day in the refrigerator. I opened it up to get some lame Diet Coke, and I'm like, it's like glowing. Wah! And I'm like, that's what I call a return on your investment. Yeah. What's the moral of the story? Pay that dude $10 and get this over here when you get home? No. When's the last time you gave something away and it hurt? It hurt a little bit. Jesus comes to them and they use this lame excuse. Oh, we don't have time. He says, well, you feed them. And here's what Jesus is good at too. He's always good at continuing the conversation. We don't have time, God. My wife's good at that too. She's like the Lord too. I don't have time to put the lights up. And she continues the conversation. Ooh, but you have time for the NFL game today. They're very different. Jesus says, you feed them. You feed them. When is the last time you gave something away and it hurt a little bit? Do you know why people need a church to go to? Because they have to be able to sort of try on Christianity. They're looking at it and they're seeing it, but they're wondering, could that fit in my life? It's sort of like girls when they go to the store and they buy a dress. They have to try it on. I mean, I worked at Nordstrom's, and I can't believe how girls shop. It's so different than guys. Guys are at home, and they're like, hey, I'm cold. They go to the store. They put on a coat. I'm warm. They go buy it, and they leave. It's like that's how they shop. Girls, crazy. Put the dress on. Come out. Talk to complete strangers they don't know. What do you think of my dress? Do you think it makes me look good? How do I look in the back? You know, and on and on. They'll bring shoes from home in their purse to try on with the dress. You're like, are you crazy? You plan your shopping? That's so weird. They'll come out scantily clad amongst everyone. Modest girls will come out, you know, and say, what do you think I look like here? And dudes, they're like, girl, go back in. That's not something you ask me. And because they want to see how it fits. And people are like that with Jesus. They want to see how it fits. And so it's really important that they have a spot they can attend so they can watch us and go, that's how it fits? Do you mean it's okay for me to have a couple of beers at night? Which I would say, yeah. Don't go over the line. A lot of people don't even, that's a small one little thing they don't know. Do you know there would be a lot more people that would even be open to Jesus if they just knew that little thing? Have a couple beers at night if you want to. Just don't go too far. Who do you wish was sitting next to you right now? Just so they could hear it. And when is the last time you gave something away and it stung a little bit? Now here's the second thing. We keep reading the story. It says the inadequate becomes adequate. So Jesus says to them, when it's all said and done, he sees right through it and he says, see what you have that you can offer me. And here's how the story goes. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven. He gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to set before the people. He also divided the two fish among them. They all ate and were satisfied. Circle that. And the disciples picked up the 12 baskets of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of men who had eaten was 5,000. So Jesus is directing things now, and people are listening, and he puts people into groups. And by the way, the miraculous and the practical can coexist. Sometimes you get churches and it's all about miraculous and hallelujah and praying and God's going to have to part the Red Sea for my life. And nothing practical at all, like the programs are ready for people walking in and the coffee's hot. And then they get churches that are all practical like this and everything, but they don't believe in any miracles at all. And we see right here, Jesus is both. He's like, woo, about to lay a miracle on everybody, but we better get it organized so everybody gets what they're supposed to have. And so he gets everybody organized and he's directing things then. And it's interesting because as he begins, he's going to start now. He's going to start, and before he does, and there's something we can see about like how to make an investment right here. And here it is, the first one. And it says that he takes the bread. And by the way, what the disciples do is they give Jesus something to work with. He's got to have something. Do you know what my goal is at my job? Is at least one person will walk up to me someday. My actual goal is, where I work, it's all dudes that are salesmen. And my goal is that the church would be filled with them someday. But my goal is at least one of them would walk up to me someday and say, Robin, do you know I have a relationship with Jesus because we worked at the same job? And here's what I've decided to give him. Because in my job, man, all these dudes are salesmen. They're very money hungry. There's lots of disputes and hassles that go on between the salesmen over money because they're supposed to split these deals. And so I've decided, here's what I've decided. Because it doesn't seem like much. When you see thousands of people out there and you got 5 loaves and 2 fishes, it may not seem like much. It's inadequate. But here's what I've decided. Every time it's an issue of money that I'm involved in, I have decided that the other person is going to receive the greater benefit. I've decided that anytime there's any type of dispute about money, the other person is going to benefit more than me. That's my little bread that I'm offering Jesus at my job. I'm hoping that people will notice that, man, that dude, every time there's a question about money, He always ends up with less, and I always end up with more. What can you offer Jesus? He's got to have something to work with. And that's principle number one when you're making an investment. Jesus has to have something to work with. A lot of times we think, well, that's not very much. I'm not going to give him that. They had 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. But they did give him something to work with. What do you have that you can give Jesus that he can work with it? Now here he is, he gets it. And don't you think of him like this? It's like you always think of Jesus as this magic person that can make everything happen. He's never scared. And you know, he just walks through everything and no problems. This is an intense time for him here, man. I mean, there's 5,000 people and more that's waiting for lunch and it's all on him. How'd you like to be in his shoes? You got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fishes, and everybody out there is hungry. Like, we know he can do it. He's a magic man. Here comes lunch now. You know, and Jesus is like, well, I don't know. He's tried to do miracles before, and they didn't happen. Don't think of him as a superhero with a magic wand and a cape. He doesn't fly around. He's not an X-Man. He's not a mutant superhero, Spider-Man, wolf boy, whatever. That's not Jesus Christ. He is a person with a relationship with God, and the pressure is on. He's going to give them a lesson. I'm going to teach the disciples about investment. Whoo, there is a lot of them out there, huh? Dang, what did I get myself into? And you know, you're not actually grateful at that moment. Opportunities can arrive. I lost $250 2 weeks ago because I gave something to work with. $250! 2 pairs of shoes I wanted that I could have bought with that money. I'm like, all right, I'm going to give it to you, Lord, to work with it. I was not grateful, I'm telling you right now. I was pissy about it. I was like, tuh, 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 tuh. First you take my beer money, now you want my shoe money. You know, it's like, ah. I think this was hard for him. I think it really was. I think he was like, whew, what if it doesn't work? Be real about your faith. What if it doesn't work? What if before you try? And get rid of the little Yoda dude. I said this once before. That stupid thing he said in Star Wars. Try, dude. Doesn't. He's dumb. Begin. That's what he should have said. Begin and see what Jesus does. And before he begins, it says he looks up to heaven. And you know what I've discovered? Sometimes I have to say a prayer before I can be thankful about the opportunity that I have. I have an opportunity to let some other guy see me, give him $250. That's got to make him think. But before I can be grateful, I'm going to have to look up to heaven. Now, what's going on in your life right now, and you're not a bit thankful for it, but it is an opportunity. Look up to heaven. He says a prayer. He says, here we go, God. Whoo, time to jump in the deep end. Here we go. And then he says, give me the bread. And he does something. Can you imagine what the disciples must have been thinking when Jesus calls them over and says, okay, I just said my prayer. We're all good now. Take the two fish and five loaves and go out and start passing them around. And they're like, you go pass them around. No, seriously, we're good now. You gave me something to work with, and I'm connected. And go, come on, let's go start. And you know, they did have to start. Anything need to start in your life? But then you look at the loaf and you look at the big job. He gave them a big project. Honestly now. That's a big, big project. And by the way, it's a big project to establish a church in this area. That is no small thing. We have a big project ahead of us. But if we will give him something to work with, if we'll just connect with heaven and say, here I go, and then we will begin. And here they go now. They got their bread. And they must have been thinking, is this some kind of a trip is this? They keep coming back. Another loaf. Okay, I counted 6,500 so far. And it says they were all satisfied. They all ate. Now listen, I want you to hear something. This is very, very important about churches. Listen up to this. Jesus didn't get all the food ready and all the provision and then come out on stage and say, listen now, you people are sleeping around, you don't get no food. Hell out. And you people over here with all that porn stuff going on, you don't get no bread either. Or you stop doing what you're doing, then you might get some bread. It said they all sat down and they all got to eat. We're a church for everyone. In fact, we're actually hoping we can get them all to come in here and sit down. Because guess what? Jesus will give them the bread. It's not our responsibility to change their life, and we cannot multiply it. Remember the big idea? He multiplies it. We got to begin. It's a huge project to get a church going out here. Everybody says you're crazy. What are you thinking? Well, here's what I'm thinking. If we can get people in front of Jesus, he'll give them what they need. Don't forget that. And so, you know, there's like, everybody sits down, everybody's included, and they're satisfied. One last thing. When you're your own provider, you'll only be temporarily satisfied. But he provides for everyone. Now look at the last point in your program. The good news is Jesus is invested in you. This is quite a story. And a little while later in Jesus' ministry, right before he's going to go to the cross, he throws a dinner for these same 12 guys. They call it the Last Supper. You know, ever heard of that? It's where we get communion from that we take. And he throws this dinner for these 12 guys. And here's what he says at the dinner. And he took the bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and gave it to them, saying, this is my body given for you. Same words as the camping trip. I wonder if all the guys are thinking back at that moment. Same words. He holds up bread, just like last time, and says a prayer. But this time he's saying, it's not about bread, it's about me. I'm not just breaking bread this time, I'm breaking me for you. And I wonder if they're thinking, when he gave them the basket, Because that's the perfect way the story ends. He gives each of these guys a basket. He says, go pick up all the leftovers. It's like processing time. Can you imagine? I mean, you've been in this story now, man. You came back, you prayed for people, you're on the boat, here's the crowd. Oh, ruin my camping trip. What? Why are you paying for all these people? What are you thinking? He's like, all right, here's some bread. I mean, this whole story is going on. And then he hands them a basket at the very end. Can you imagine what they're thinking when they're walking around with this basket, filling it up with all the leftovers? Every disciple ended up with more than they had in the beginning, and thousands of people were helped. Welcome to church. Because that's what it means to be a part of East Lake. That's what it means to be a part of church. That's what it means to invest with God. You'll end up with more, and thousands of people would be helped. I'm sure they had their basket, and they're putting stuff in, and go, man, it would take me 8 months to earn money to pay for all this stuff. He did it with a little prayer. And now he's at the dinner and he holds up the bread and he says, it's not bread this time, guys. I'm breaking my body. I'm investing in you.